Thank you so much, Rosie and Jack and everybody. Really, really good to be with you today. It's still morning for me, so you're way ahead of me. And I hope you're all having a good day because, you know, you're in the future. Fireweather intruded into my life on May 3rd, 2016. And I made the mistake of looking at Twitter when I was actually in a really beautiful Italian writer's retreat working on a novel. And so Twitter shouldn't be allowed in such places. And yet there I looked at it, and this city, Fort McMurray in northern Alberta, was completely shrouded in black smoke. And Fort McMurray isn't really known to people outside of Canada or North America. And it is the largest source of foreign petroleum imports into the United States. They just broke 4 million barrels a day of production. It's about 600 miles north of the US border and 600 miles south of the Arctic Circle. It's deep in the boreal forest, very isolated place, sitting on top of a gigantic bitumen deposit. Bitumen is not oil, it is tar. And in order to render it into something that an American petroleum company will want to buy, you have to burn billions of cubic feet of natural gas every day to process this stuff into something usable. It caught on fire. The petroleum plant didn't, but the city of roughly 100,000 people where all the workers live was overrun by a wildfire on the afternoon of May 3rd, initiating the largest, most rapid evacuation due to fire in modern times. And this is what came across my Twitter feed on May 3rd. And I'm looking at this, and because Fort McMurray occupies such an outsized role in the Canadian consciousness, because so much money is generated there and the wages are so massive, it really touches the whole country kind of the way Silicon Valley touches the whole United States. So it was frightening to see the city disappear, to see these ant-like trails of cars crawling down the single highway out of the city. Everything was going at this glacially slow pace because everybody was evacuating at once. There was no understanding of who is left, what is saved, what has been burned, who has died. Nobody knew for days. And again, I'm in Italy. I'm thinking I should be in Western Canada where I live. This is the biggest story in a generation. And so I was, you know, feeling rueful about that and afraid for the people, and thought, no, I'm here to write a novel, and tried vainly to go back into it. And then really just couldn't take my eyes off it, in part because the fire didn't pass. The fire burnt in Fort McMurray, not for one or two or 3 days, but for an entire week. And the Great Fire of London lasted for about 5 days, and houses and entire work camps were burning to the ground in Fort McMurray 2 weeks later. 2,300 square miles of forest burned in the process. And again, you know, 90,000 people were evacuated. I'm looking at this and realizing this is obviously a national story, but I really try to write international stories. I'm interested in kind of universal themes. And the closer I looked at this, when I started looking at the behavior of the fire and the conditions under which it occurred, I realized that these are conditions that can be replicated almost anywhere in the world. And again, this was back in 2016, which seems like an almost quaint historic time when we consider the incredibly destructive fires that have burned since then across Greece, even in the UK. I think you had the busiest fire day since World War II. And I think it was in 2021 or 2022 during that terrible drought. But, you know, Valparaiso and Chile just literally last week, an apocalypse for them. So this is back in 2016. I'm looking at the conditions, and it's, you know, this is the subarctic of Canada. It's a cold place. It's a wet place. And yet it was 33 Celsius that day. And really more significant and something that we don't think about was the relative humidity. And it was 11%. And that really doesn't have a lot of meaning for most of us. And it didn't have a lot of meaning for me until I started looking for places where 11% was normal. And 11% relative humidity is normal in Death Valley in July. And that's how dry it was in Fort McMurray in May. There was ice still on the local lakes. There were car-sized blocks of ice on the Athabasca River, which is the main water body that flows through that city. So basically, Southern California fire conditions were recreated in the boreal forest. And that's a terrifying prospect. And that changes fundamentally how fire behaves. And so I coined a term, which is 21st century fire. And it's a different animal. It behaves differently. We've got the same planet. We've got the same sun. We've got the same trees. But when you tweak the heat and you tweak the humidity, that changes the dynamic and creates a space for fire, an opportunity for explosive behavior that simply didn't exist in a lot of places prior. So on May 3rd, this fire that started quite innocently in the forest was unsuppressible by human means. They had water bombers on it. They had hotshot crews. Albertans are very good firefighters, and they could not put this fire out. The temperature and the humidity did not change. It stayed very hot at night, which is one of the characteristics of 21st century fire and really 21st century climate change. The temperatures are not dropping at night the way they used to. So it stays warm. And the warmer it is, the easier it is for fire to expand. So we have this hot, explosive situation that on May 3rd, with very little provocation, became 100-meter flames across a wall about 10 kilometers wide. And so it's really, you have to think something more like a tsunami of flame that swept in to the city of Fort McMurray, which has a lot of suburban settlements on hilltops, the river flowing through it, kind of urbanized downtown. And the you know, these are all things that I really had no idea about when I was going into this story, but radiant heat, which is the heat that tells you not to touch the candle flame, is energy that moves at the speed of light. And the radiant heat coming out of the forest into the neighborhoods of Fort McMurray was 500 Celsius that day. That's hotter than the planet Venus. And what the heat does, what heat does for fire, is it dries out the fuel, and then it also causes whatever available hydrocarbons they are. It might be in the trees, it might be in the leaves, it might be in the rubber tires, it might be in the vinyl siding on the side of the houses or the tar shingle roofs or the plastic swing set. It causes the hydrocarbons in those fuels to vaporize. So we're feeling the heat. We're seeing the smoke. We're trying to get out. What the fire is seeing is this, it's almost like an aura. It's this cloud of billowing fuel emanating, not just from the forest, but now from the city itself. And vapor is what fire engages with. Think of a gas can exploding. The houses in Fort McMurray, these are two-story, $500,000, state-of-the-art brand new homes, burnt from the roof to the basement in 5 minutes because they were superheated in their entirety to 500 Celsius, vaporizing like crazy. And so everything engaged at once. And firefighters cannot fight that. Human beings have no means at their disposal to combat that. So this is a petroleum town. And what I took me 7 years to understand, 7 years to write this book, that the petroleum industry is a wholly owned subsidiary of fire. It's kind of a crazy idea. It feels a little bit backwards. But the petroleum industry, and all of us too, are servants now of fire. And our servitude to liquefied fuel over the past 150 years has changed the nature of our atmosphere to the point that fire is now able to burn more broadly, more intensely on planet Earth than at any other time in human history. So the question now is fire serving us, enabling us to live these spectacular lives where we have unparalleled mobility and many of us are able to generate much more wealth because of it, even ordinary people? Or are we serving fire and enabling it to prosper and flourish in fire's terms across the globe more intensely than it ever has? And I think the historical record, the geologic record, will indicate that fire got the better end of this deal. And that's, you know, that's in our future somewhere. Right now, what the planet is telling us is to pay attention. And what the petroleum industry has allowed us to do is to think that we don't need nature, to think that we can manipulate it, that we can amp it up or damp it down as we need to. We can drive in vehicles that insulate it from its us from its effects, live in homes that insulate us from its various changes and fluctuations. And what it is now, you know, the message I get from this heating and from these fires is kind of being grabbed by the collar and saying, I'm out here, I'm impacting, I'm being impacted by you, and your impacts are now causing me to impact you in return in ways that are not tenable. So, you know, the message, the obvious message for me is, you know, to decarbonize as rapidly as possible. But I was also, you know, really resonating to what Jackie was saying is, you know, major obstacles stand in our way. And yet a friend of mine here from Alberta, in fact, said when he became a father, he understood that he was morally obligated to be an optimist. And I think going through the world now in an energetic way, in a proactive way, in a positive way, is a practice. It's not sort of a matter of, well, I'm having a good day today, so I guess I'll do something positive. It's really, it's a conscious effort. And we also have to remember that nature's default mode is revivescence. It's to flourish, it's to rebound, and it's to regrow. That's what it wants to do. When you stop killing anything, it generally rebounds. I learned that when I was writing The Tiger. When you stop shooting tigers, they breed like cats. And that's what the living world wants to do, is reproduce itself. And so that's very hopeful to me. And I want to be a part of that. And that's, you know, as I've been traveling around with this book and people are wondering, how do we face this? How do we confront this? There are, along with these really grim indicators from our climate, there are also these incredible gains being made around renewable energy and around the way people are renegotiating their relationships with nature through agriculture and forestry, and just as a way of being more, living more lightly on the world. And those people are in abundance among us, and it behooves us to ally ourselves with them rather than get tangled up with the people who appear to be still wedded to an ever bigger truck or expanding petroleum operations. And so there's, you know, there are different pathways we can choose. And it's very easy to get distracted by the negative and overwhelmed by the negative. I love that comment, pessimism is for lightweights, very challenging. And but I'm exhilarated by it, and I'm here for it. So thanks so much for your attention, and really good to be with you all.